centimeters towards Mum. Mum turns a few centimeters towards Elsa. "What do you think your granny would have done now?" asks Mum calmly.
"She would have cleared out,"
says Elsa, still with her forehead against Mum's forehead. The summer intern policeman and the nurses with the stretcher are only a few meters from the car when Mum slowly nods. Then she puts Kia into gear, and with the tyres spinning in the snow, skids out into the road and drives off. It's the most irresponsible thing Elsa has ever seen her mother do. She'll always love her for it. Chapter 15. Wood Shavings. Perhaps the most curious of all the curious creatures in the land of Almost Awake, even by Granny's yardstick, are the regretters. They are wild animals living in herds, whose grazing areas are just outside Miamis, where they forage widely and really nobody knows how they survive, considering the circumstances. At first sight, regretters look more or less like white horses, although they are far more ambivalent and suffer from the biological defect of never being able to make up their minds. This obviously causes certain practical problems because regretters are flock animals, and one regret therefore almost always crashes into another when heading off in one direction and then changing its mind. For this reason, regretters always have enormous, oblong swellings on their foreheads, which in various fairy tales from Miamis that have ended up in the real world has made people consistently get them confused with unicorns. But in Miamis, the storytellers learned the hard way not to cut costs by hiring a regretter to do the job of a unicorn, because whenever they did, the fairy tales had a tendency never to get to the point. And also no one, really no one at all, feels good after standing behind a regretter in the queue for the lunch buffet. "So there's no point changing your mind, all you get is a headache," Granny used to say, smacking herself on the forehead. Elsa thinks about that now, sitting in Kia outside school and looking at Mum. She wonders if Granny ever regretted all the times she left Mum. She wonders if Granny's head was full of bumps. She hopes so. Mum is massaging her temples and swearing repeatedly through gritted teeth. She is obviously regretting speeding away from the hospital like that, since the first thing she has to do after dropping Elsa off at the school is drive straight back to the hospital so she can go to work. Elsa pats her on the shoulder.
"Maybe you can blame it on your baby brain."
Mum shuts her eyes in resignation. She's had rather too much baby brain lately. So much so that she could not even find Elsa's Gryffindor scarf when they looked for it this morning, and so much so that she keeps putting her telephone in strange places. In the refrigerator, and in the rubbish bin, and the laundry basket, and on one occasion in George's jogging shoes. This morning, Elsa had to call Mum's telephone 3 times, which is not entirely uncomplicated, as the display on Elsa's telephone is quite fuzzy after its encounter with the toaster. But in the end, they found Mum's telephone ringing inside Elsa's backpack. The Gryffindor scarf was also there. "You see," Mum tried to say, "nothing is really gone until your Mum can't find it." But Elsa rolled her eyes, and then Mum looked ashamed of herself and mumbled, "It's my baby brain, I'm afraid." She looks ashamed of herself now as well, and full of regret. "Darling, I don't think they'll let me be the head of a hospital if I tell them I had a police escort to accident and emergency." Elsa reaches out and pats Mum on the cheek.
"It'll get better, Mum. It'll be fine."
Granny used to say that, Elsa realizes as soon as she says it. Mum puts her hand on Harfy and nods with fake self-assurance in order to change the subject. "Your dad will pick you up this afternoon, don't forget. And George will take you to school on Monday. I have a conference then, and..." Elsa patiently gives Mum's head a scratch.
"I'm not going to school on Monday, Mum. It's the Christmas holidays."
Mum put her hand on Elsa's hand and inhales deeply from the point where they're touching, as if trying to fill her lungs with Elsa, as mums do with daughters who grow up too fast. "Sorry, darling, I forgot."
"It doesn't matter," says Elsa,
even though it does, a little. They hug each other hard before Elsa hops out of the car. She waits until Kia has disappeared before she opens her backpack and gets out Mum's mobile, then scrolls to Dad's name in the address book and sends him an SMS. Actually, there is no need for you to pick up Elsa this afternoon. I can manage it. Elsa knows this is how they talk about her. She is something that needs to be picked up or sorted, like doing the laundry. She knows they mean no harm by it, but come on, no 7-year-old who has seen films about the Italian mafia wants to be sorted by her family. Mum's mobile vibrates in Elsa's hand. She sees Dad's name on the display, and underneath, "I understand." Elsa deletes it, and deletes the SMS she sent to Dad from the outgoing messages, then stands on the pavement, counting down from 20. When she's got to 7, Kia screeches back into the parking area and Mum, slightly out of breath, winds down the window. Elsa gives her the mobile. Mum mumbles, "It's my baby brain." Elsa kisses her on the cheek. Mum touches her throat and asks if Elsa has seen her scarf. "In your right-hand coat pocket," says Elsa. Mum pulls the scarf out, takes Elsa's head in her hands and pulls her closer and kisses her forehead very hard. Elsa closes her eyes.
"Nothing is really gone until your daughter can't find it," she whispers into Mum's ear.
"You're going to be a fantastic big sister," Mum whispers back. Elsa doesn't answer. She just stands there waving as Kia drives off. She couldn't answer because she doesn't want Mum to know that she doesn't want to be a big sister, doesn't want anyone to know that she is this horrible person who hates her own half-sibling just because Halfie is going to be more loved by them than Elsa. Doesn't want anyone to know she's afraid they'll abandon her. She turns round and looks into the playground. No one has seen her yet. She reaches into her backpack and gets out the letter she found in Renault. She doesn't recognize the address, and Granny was always terrible at giving directions. Elsa isn't even sure this address exists in real life, because quite often when Granny was explaining where things were, she used landmarks that were no longer there.
"It's right by where those morons with the budgerigars lived. Past the old tennis club, down where the old rubber factory or whatever it was used to be," she'd ramble on, and when people didn't get exactly what she was talking about, Granny got so frustrated that she had to smoke 2 cigarettes one after the other, lighting the second by the embers of the first. And then when someone said she couldn't do that indoors, she got so angry that it was utterly impossible after that to get any decent directions out of her. Impossible, in fact, to get anything except her expletive middle finger. Really, what Elsa wanted to do was rip the letter into 10,000 pieces and let the wind blow it all away. That was what she had decided last night, because she was angry at Granny. But now, after Mum has told her the whole story and Elsa has seen all that brokenness in Mum's eyes, she's made the decision not to do that. Elsa is going to deliver the letter, this and all the other letters Granny has left for her. This is going to be a grand adventure and a monstrous fairy tale, just as Granny planned it. But Elsa isn't doing it for Granny's sake. First of all, she's going to need a computer. She looks at the playground again, and at the precise moment when the bell goes and everyone turns away from the street, she runs past the fence towards the bus stop. Gets off one stop later, runs into the shop, and goes straight to the ice cream counter, then back to the house, where she sneaks into the cellar storage unit and buries her face in the Wurster's fur. It's her new favourite place on earth. "I've got ice cream in the bag,"
she says at last when she lifts her head. The Wurst points its nose with interest.
"It's Ben and Jerry's New York Super Fudge Chunk, my favourite,"
Elsa elaborates. The Wurst has eaten more than half the ice cream before she reaches the end of that sentence. She caresses its ears.
"I just have to get hold of a computer, stay here and, you know, try to stay out of sight."
The Wurst looks at her like a very big Wurst that has just been told to behave like a considerably smaller Wurst. Elsa promises to find it a much better hiding place. Soon. She runs up the stairs, checks carefully that Brick Marie is not lurking anywhere, and once she's sure she's not, rings the monster's doorbell. It doesn't open. She rings the bell again. Everything is silent. She groans and opens his letterbox and peers inside. All of the lights are out, but that doesn't dissuade her.
"I know you're there,"
she calls out. No one answers. Elsa takes a deep breath
If you don't open, I'll sneeze right inside, and I've got a mega co-"
she starts to say threateningly, before a hiss interrupts her from behind, like someone trying to make a cat jump down from a table. She spins round. The monster steps out of the shadows on the stairs. She can't understand how such a huge person can make himself invisible all the time. He's rubbing his hands together, turning the skin around his knuckles red.
"Don't sneeze! Don't sneeze!"
he implores anxiously.
"I need to borrow your computer, because I think George could be at home, and I can't surf on my mobile because the display is screwed because Granny had a Fanta and toaster-related incident with it."
The hood over the monster's head moves slowly from side to side.
"No computer."
"Just let me borrow it, so I can check the address," Elsa whines, waving Granny's letter in the air.
The monster shakes his head again.
"Fine, just give me your Wi-Fi password then so I can connect my iPad,"
she manages to say, rolling her eyes until it feels as if her pupils are out of position when she stops.
"I don't have 3G on the iPad because Dad bought the iPad and Mum got pissed because she didn't want me to have such expensive stuff, and she doesn't like Apple, so it was a compromise. It's complicated, okay? I only need to borrow your Wi-Fi, that's all. Good God!"
"No computer," repeats the monster.
"No computer,"
Elsa repeats with extreme disbelief. The monster shakes his head.
"You don't have a computer."
The hood moves from side to side. Elsa peers at him as if he's having her on, is clinically insane, or both.
"How can you not have a computer?"
The monster produces a small sealed plastic bag from one of his jacket pockets, and inside it is a small bottle of Alcogel. Carefully, he squeezes out some of its contents and starts rubbing it into his palms and skin.
"Don't need computer," he growls.
Elsa takes a deep, irritated breath and takes a look around the stairs. George may still be at home, so she can't go inside because then he'll ask why she's not at school, and she can't go to Maud and Leonard because they're too kind to lie, so if Mum asks if they've seen Elsa, they'll tell her the truth. The boy with the syndrome and his mum aren't here in the daytime, and forget Brit Marie, which doesn't exactly leave a wealth of possibilities. Elsa collects herself and tries to think about how a knight of Miamis is never afraid of a treasure hunt, even if it's difficult. And then she goes up the stairs. Alf opens the door after the seventh ring. His flat smells of wood shavings. He's wearing a sorry excuse for a dressing gown, and the remaining hairs on his head look like the last tottering bits of buildings after a hurricane. He's holding a large white cup on which it says, "Juventus," and there's a smell of coffee, strong like Granny always drank it.
"After Alf has made coffee, you have to drive standing up all morning," she used to say,
and Elsa didn't quite know what she meant, although she understood what she was saying.
"Yes," he grunts.
"You know where this is,"
says Elsa, and holds out the envelope with Granny's handwriting on it.
"Are you waking me up to ask about a bloody address?"
answers Alf, in every way inhospitably, before taking a big gulp of coffee.
"Were you still sleeping?"
Alf takes another mouthful and nods at his wristwatch.
"I drive the late shift. This is night time for me.
Do I come to your flat in the middle of the night to ask you random questions?" Elsa looks at the cup. Looks at Alf.
"If you're asleep, why are you drinking coffee?"
Alf looks at the cup, looks at Elsa, looks totally puzzled. Elsa shrugs.
"Do you know where this is or not?"
she asks, and points at the envelope. Alf looks a little as if he's repeating her question to himself inside his head, in a very exaggerated and contemptuous tone. Has another sip of coffee.
"I've been a taxi driver for more than 30 years.
"And?" wonders Elsa.
"And so, of course, I bloody know where that is. It's by the old waterworks,"
he says, then drains his cup.
"What?"
Alf looks resigned.
"Young people and their lack of history, I tell you. Where the rubber factory was until they moved it again, and the brickyard."
Elsa's expression gives away the possibility that she doesn't have a clue what he's talking about. Alf claws at the remains of his hair and disappears into the flat, comes back with a topped-up cup of coffee and a map, puts down the coffee cup with a slam on a shelf in the hall and marks the map with a thick ring using a biro.
Oh, there! That's where the shopping centre is. Why didn't you just say?
Alf says something that Elsa can't quite make out and closes the door in her face.
I'll keep the map,
Elsa hollers cheerfully into his letterbox. He doesn't answer.
It's the Christmas holidays, if you're wondering. That's why I'm not at school,
she calls out. He doesn't answer that either. The worse is lying on its side with two legs comfortably stretched up into the air when Elsa walks into the storage unit, as if it has very gravely misunderstood a Pilates exercise. The monster is standing in the passage outside, rubbing his hands. He looks very uncomfortable. Elsa holds up the envelope to him.
Are you coming?
The monster nods. The hood glides away a few inches from his face, and the big scar gleams momentarily in the fluorescent light. He doesn't even ask where they're going. It's difficult not to feel a pang of affection for him. Elsa looks first at him, and then at the worse. She knows that Mum is going to be angry with her for skiving and going off without permission, but when Elsa asks her why she's always so worried about her, Mum always says, "Because I'm so bloody afraid something may happen to you." But Elsa is having a pretty hard time thinking that anything can happen to you when you have a monster and a worse tagging along. So she feels it should be okay, given the circumstances. The worse tries to lick the monster when it walks out of the storage unit. The monster jumps in terror and snatches back his hand and grabs a broom leaning up against another storage unit. The worse, as if it's teasing and having a bit of a laugh, sweeps its tongue back and forth in long, mischievous movements.
Drop it,
Elsa tells it. The monster holds out the broom like a lance and tries to force the worse back by pushing the bristles into its nose.
I said, drop it!
Elsa snaps at both of them. The worse closes its jaws round the broom and crunches it to smithereens.
Drop it!
Elsa begins but doesn't have time to finish the last it before the monster has thrown both broom and worse across the cellar with all his might, sending the heavy animal crashing hard into the wall several metres away. The worse rolls up and flexes its body in one movement and is in the middle of a terrifying spring before it's even landed. Its jaws are open and rows of kitchen knife-sized teeth exposed. The monster faces it with a broad chest and the blood pumping in his fists.
Cut it out, I said,
Elsa roars, throwing her little body right between the two furious creatures, unprotected between claws as sharp as spears and fists probably big enough to separate her head from her shoulders. She stands her ground, armed with nothing but the indifference of an almost 8-year-old to her own physical shortcomings, which goes a long way. The worse stops itself mid-leap and lands softly beside her. The monster takes a few steps back. Slowly, muscles relax and lungs release air. Neither of them meet her gaze.
The idea here is that you're supposed to protect me,
Elsa says in a quieter voice, trying not to cry, which doesn't go so terrifically well.
I've never had any friends, and now you two try to kill the only two I've ever had just after I found you.
The worse lowers its nose. The monster rubs his hands, disappears into his hood and makes a rocking motion towards the worse.
Started it,
the monster manages to say. The worse growls back. Stop it. She tries to sound angry but realizes she mainly just sounds as if she's crying. The monster, concerned, moves the palm of his hand up and down along her side as close as possible without actually touching her.
Sorry,
he mumbles. The worse buffets her shoulder. She rests her forehead against its nose.
We have an important mission here, so you can't keep messing about. We have to deliver this letter because I think Granny wants to say sorry to someone else. And there are more letters. This is our fairy tale, to deliver every single one of Granny's sorries.
With her face in the worse's fur, she inhales deeply and closes her eyes.
We have to do it for my mum's sake, because I'm hoping that the last sorry will be to her.
Chapter 16. Dust. It turns into an epic adventure, a monstrous fairy tale. Elsa decides they should begin by taking the bus, like normal knights on normal quests in more or less normal fairy tales when there aren't any horses or cloud animals available. But when all the other people at the bus stop start eyeing the monster and the worse, and nervously shuffling as far away from them as it's possible to be without ending up at the next bus stop, she realizes it's not going to be quite so straightforward. On boarding the bus, it becomes immediately clear that worsters are not all that partial to travelling by public transport. After it snuffled about and stepped on people's toes and overturned bags with its tail, and accidentally dribbled a bit on a seat a little too close to the monster for the monster to feel entirely comfortable, Elsa decides to forget the whole thing. And then all three of them get off. Exactly one stop later. Elsa pulls the Gryffindor scarf tighter round her face, pushes her hands into her pockets, and leads them through the snow. The worse is so delighted about escaping the bus that it skips in circles around Elsa and the monster like an overexcited puppy. The monster looks disgusted. He doesn't seem used to being outdoors by daylight, Elsa notices. Maybe it's because Wolfheart is used to living in the dark forests outside Miamis where the daylight doesn't dare penetrate. At least that is where he lives in Granny's fairy tales, so if there is any sort of order to this story, this must surely be the logical explanation. People who see them on the pavement react as people generally do when they catch sight of a girl, a worse, and a monster, strolling along side by side. They cross the street. Some of them try to pretend that it has nothing to do with the fact that they are scared of monsters and worses and girls by demonstratively pretending to be having loud telephone conversations with someone who suddenly gives them different directions and tells them to go the opposite way. That is also what Elsa's dad does sometimes, when he's gone the wrong way and he doesn't want strangers to realize he's one of those types who go the wrong way. Elsa's mum never has that problem, because if she goes the wrong way, she just keeps going until whoever she was supposed to be meeting has to follow her. Granny used to solve the problem by shouting at the road signs. It varies how people deal with it. But others who run into the adventuring trio are not as discreet, and they watch Elsa from the other side of the road as if she's being abducted. Elsa feels that the monster would probably be good at many things, but a kidnapper who can be put out of action by sneezing at him would probably not be a particularly effective kidnapper. It's a curious sort of Achilles heel for a superhero, she feels. Snot. The walk takes more than 2 hours. Elsa wishes it was Halloween, because then they could take the bus without scaring normal people. Everyone would just assume they were dressed up. That's why Elsa likes Halloween. On Halloween, it's normal to be different. It's almost lunchtime by the time they find the right address. Elsa's feet hurt, and she's hungry, and in a bad mood. She knows that a knight of Miamis would never whine or be afraid of a grand adventure when sent out on a treasure hunt, but whoever said a knight can't be hungry or ill-tempered? There's a high-rise at the address, but also a hamburger restaurant across the street. Elsa tells the worse and the monster to wait, and she goes across even though she has firm moral objections to hamburger chains, as every almost 8-year-old should. But even almost 8-year-olds can't eat their principles, so she grudgingly buys ice cream for the worse, a hamburger for the monster, and a veggie burger for herself. And as she sneaks out, she gets out her red felt-tip pen and crosses out the dash between lunch and menu. Despite the below-zero temperature clawing at their faces, they sit on a bench opposite the high-rise building. Or rather, Elsa and the worse sit, because the monster looks at the bench as if it's also about to lick him. He refuses to even touch the greaseproof paper round his hamburger, so the worse eats that as well. At one point, the worse drops a bit of his ice cream on the bench and licks it up without concern, and the monster looks close to asphyxiation. After the worse takes a bite of Elsa's burger and she carries on eating it regardless, she has to help him breathe from a paper bag. When they're finally done, Elsa leans her head back and looks up the facade of the building. It must be 15 floors high. She takes the envelope from her pocket, slides off the bench and marches inside. The monster and the worse follow her in silence, surrounded by a strong smell of alcohol. Elsa quickly scans the board of residence on the wall and finds the name as written on the envelope, though preceded by the words, Reg, psychotherapist. Elsa doesn't know what that means, but she's heard a good deal about therapists letting off bombs and causing all sorts of trouble, so a psychotherapist must be even worse. She heads over to the lift at the other end of the corridor. The worse stops when they get there and refuses to take another step. Elsa shrugs and goes in. The monster follows her, after a certain amount of hesitation, though he is careful not to touch any of the walls. Elsa evaluates the monster as they're going up. His beard sticks out of the hood like a large, curious squirrel, which makes him seem less and less dangerous the longer she knows him. The monster clearly takes note of her examination of him, and he twists his hands uncomfortably. To her own surprise, Elsa realizes that his attitude hurts her feelings.
If it bothers you so much, you could just stay on guard downstairs with the worse, you know. It's not like something's going to happen to me while I'm handing over a letter to the therapist.
She talks in normal language because she refuses to speak in the secret language to him. Her jealousy about Granny's language not even being Granny's from the very beginning hasn't gone away.
Anyway, you don't have to be right beside me the whole time to be able to guard me, she says,
sounding more resentful than she means to. She'd started thinking of the monster as a friend, but remembers now that he's only here because Granny told him. The monster just stands there in silence. When the elevator doors glide open, Elsa marches out ahead of him. They pass rows of doors until they find the therapist's door. Elsa knocks so hard she actually hurts her knuckles. The monster backs off towards the wall on the other side of the narrow corridor, as if he realizes that the person on the other side of the door may peer through the spy hole. He seems to be trying to make himself as small and unfrightening as possible. It's hard not to find this endearing, thinks Elsa, even if unfrightening is not a proper word. Elsa knocks on the door again, puts her ear against the lock. Another knock. Another silence.
Empty, says the monster, slowly.
No shit, Sherlock.
She really doesn't mean to be angry with him because it's Granny she's angry with. She's just tired, so very, very tired. She looks around and catches sight of two wooden chairs.
They must be out for lunch. We'll have to wait, she says, glumly, and drops despondently into one of the chairs.
As far as Elsa is concerned, the silence goes from pleasant to hard work to unbearable in about 1.5 eternities. And when she's occupied herself with everything she's been able to come up with, drumming her fingers against the tabletop, poking out all the stuffing from the chair cushion through a little hole in the fabric, and carving her name into the soft wood of the armrest with the nail of her index finger, she shatters the silence with one of those questions that sound much more accusing than she means it to be.
Why do you wear soldier's trousers if you're not a soldier?
The monster breathes slowly under his hood.
Old trousers.
Have you been a soldier?
The hood moves up and down.
War is wrong and soldiers are wrong. Soldiers kill people.
Not that sort of soldier, the monster intones.
There's only one sort of soldier.
The monster doesn't answer. Elsa carves a swear word into the wood of the armrest using her nail. In actual fact, she doesn't want to ask the question that's burning inside of her because she doesn't want the monster to know how wounded she is. But she can't stop herself. It's one of Elsa's big problems, they say at school, that she can never control herself.
Was it you who showed my granny my amus, or was it Granny who showed you?
She spits out the words. The hood doesn't move, but she can see him breathing. She's just about to repeat the question when she hears from the inside of it.
Your granny showed. As a child.
He says it the way he says everything in the normal language, as if the words come bickering out of his mouth.
You're about my age,
Elsa says, thinking of the photos of the werewolf boy. The hood moves up and down.
Did she tell you fairy tales?
She asks quietly, and wishes he'd say no, even though she knows better. The hood moves up and down.
Did you meet during a war? Is that why she called you Wolfheart?
She really doesn't want to ask any more because she can feel her jealousy growing, but the hood continues to nod.
Camp. Camp for the one who flees.
A refugee camp. Did Granny bring you here with her? Was she the one who arranged it so you could live in the flat?
There's a long exhalation from the hood.
Lived in many places. Many homes.
Foster homes. He nods. Why didn't you stay there?
The hood moves from side to side very slowly.
Bad homes. Dangerous. Your granny came to get me.
Why did you become a soldier? Was it so you could go to the same places as granny?
He nods.
Did you also want to help people like she does?
Slowly the hood moves up and down.
Why didn't you become a doctor like granny then?
The monster rubs his hands together.
Blood. Don't like blood.
Smart idea to become a soldier. Are you an orphan?
The hood is still. The monster is silent, but she notices that the beard withdraws even deeper into the darkness. Suddenly Elsa nods exuberantly to herself.
Like the X-Men!
She exclaims with more enthusiasm than she's really willing to give away. Then she clears her throat, composes herself.
X-Men are mutants, and many X-Men are sort of orphans. It's quite cool.
The hood doesn't move. Elsa pulls out some more stuffing from the chair cushion and feels stupid. She was about to add that Harry Potter was also an orphan, and to be like Harry Potter in any way at all is actually the coolest thing there is. But she's starting to realise that the monster probably doesn't read as much quality literature as one might hope.
Is Miamis a word in the secret language?
She asks instead.
I mean, is it a word in your language? It doesn't sound like other words in the secret language. I mean, your language.
The hood doesn't move, but the words come more softly now. Not like all the other words from the monster, which all seem to be on their guard. These sound almost dreamy.
Mama's language. Miamis. My. Mama's language.
Elsa looks up and gazes intently into the darkness inside the hood.
Did you not have the same language?
The hood moves from side to side.
Where did your mother come from?
Asks Elsa.
Other place. Other war.
What does Miamis mean, then?
The words come out like a sigh.
I love.
So it was your kingdom. That's why it was called Miamis. It wasn't at all because I called pajamas majamas.
Elsa pulls out the last bit of stuffing and rolls it into a ball to distract herself from her churning jealousy.
Typical bloody granny thing, making up Miamis for you so you'd know your mother loved you, she mumbles, abruptly silencing herself when she realizes she's saying it aloud.
The monster shifts his weight from foot to foot, breathing more slowly, rubbing his hands.
Miamis. Not made up.
Not pretend. Not for a little one. Miamis. For real. For children.
And then, while Elsa closes her eyes to avoid showing her agreement, he goes on tentatively.
In letter, grandmother's apology was apology to mother.
He whispers from under his hood. Elsa's eyes open and she frowns.
What?
The monster's chest heaves up and down.
You asked about Granny's letter, what Granny wrote. Wrote apology to my mother. We never found my mother.
Their eyes meet halfway, on different terms. A tiny but mutual respect is created between them there and then, as Miamasians. Elsa realizes that he's telling her what was in the letter because he understands what it's like when people have secrets from you just because you're a child. So she sounds considerably less angry when she asks,
Did you look for your mother?
The hood moves up and down.
For how long?
Always. Since the camp.
Elsa's chin drops slightly.
So that's why Granny was always going off on all these trips. Because you were looking for your mother.
The speed of the monster's hand rubbing increases. His chest heaves. His hood moves down a fraction, then up again, infinitely slowly, and then everything is silent. Elsa nods and looks down at her lap, and once again, her anger wells up unreasonably inside her.
My granny was also someone's mother. Did you ever think about that?
The monster doesn't answer.
You don't have to guard me,
Elsa snaps and starts scratching more swear words into the wooden armrest. Not guard, the monster finally growls from behind her. His black eyes emerge from under the hood. Not guard. Friend. He disappears back in under the hood. Elsa burrows her gaze into the floor and scrapes her heels against the wall-to-wall carpet, stirring up more dust. Thanks, she whispers grumpily. But she says it in the secret language now. The monster doesn't say anything, but when he rubs his hands together, it's no longer as hard and frenetic.
You don't like talking so much, do you?
No. But you do. All the time.
And that's the first time Elsa believes he's smiling, or almost anyway.
Touché,
Elsa grins. Elsa doesn't know how long they wait, but they keep waiting long after Elsa has really decided to give up. They wait until the lift door opens with a little ping, and the woman in the black skirt walks into the corridor. She approaches the office with big strides, but freezes mid-air as she sees the enormous bearded man and the small girl, who looks as if she'd fit into the palm of one of his hands. The girl stares at her. The woman in the black skirt is holding a small plastic box of salad. It's trembling. She looks as if she's considering turning round and running away, or maybe, like a child, believes that if she closes her eyes, she'll no longer be visible. Instead, she stands frozen to the spot a few meters away from them, her hands grasping the edge of the box as if it was the edge of a cliff. Elsa rises from her chair. Wolfhard backs away from them both. If Elsa had been looking at him, she would have noticed as he moved away an expression on his face that she had never seen in him before. A sort of fear that no one in the land of Almost Awake would have believed Wolfhard capable of. But Elsa doesn't look at him as she rises from the chair. She is only looking at the woman in the black skirt.
I think I have a letter for you,
Elsa eventually manages to say. The woman stands still, with her knuckles whitening round the plastic box. Elsa insistently reaches towards her with the envelope.
It's from my granny. I think she's saying sorry about something.
The woman takes it. Elsa puts her hands in her pockets because she doesn't quite know what to do with them. It's unclear what the woman in the black skirt is doing here, but Elsa is certain that Granny had some reason for making her bring the letter. Because there's no coincidence in Miamis or in fairy tales, everything that's there is meant to be there.
It's not your name on the envelope, I know that, but it has to be for you.
The woman smells of mint today, not wine. Carefully she opens the letter. Her lips tighten. The letter trembles in her hands.
I used to have this name
a long time ago.
I changed back to my maiden name when I moved into your house, but this was my name when I met your grandmother. After the wave,
ventures Elsa. The woman's lips pinch inwards until they disappear.
I planned to change the name on the office door as well, but, well, I don't know. It never happened.
The letter starts trembling even more violently.
What does it say?
Asks Elsa, regretting that she didn't have a quick peek before handing it over. The woman in the black skirt makes all the right movements to start crying, but seems to be out of tears.
Your grandmother writes, sorry, she says slowly.
For what?
Elsa asks at once.
Because she sent you here.
Elsa is just about to correct her and point at Wolfhard and say,
sent us here.
But when she looks up, he's already gone. She didn't hear the elevator or the ground floor door closing. He's just disappeared.
like a fart through an open window, as Granny used to say when things weren't where they were supposed to be.
The woman with the black skirt moves towards the door, emblazoned with the words, Reg, psychotherapist, followed by the name she once had. She puts the key in the lock and gestures quickly for Elsa to come in, although it's quite obviously not what she wants at all. When she notices that Elsa's eyes are still searching for her large hewn friend, the woman with the black skirt whispers morosely, I had another office when your granny last came to see me with him. That's why he didn't know you were coming to me. He would never have come if he had known you were coming here. He is frightened of me.
Chapter 17. Cinnamon Bun.
In one fairy tale from the land of Almost Awake, a girl from Miamis broke the curse and released the sea angel. But Granny never explained how it happened. Elsa sits by the desk of the woman with the black skirt in a chair that Elsa assumes must be for visitors. Judging by the cloud of dust that enveloped Elsa when she sat down, as if she'd accidentally stumbled into a smoke machine at a magic show, she decides the woman can't have very many visitors. Ill at ease, the woman sits on the other side of the desk, reading and rereading the letter from Granny, though Elsa is quite sure by now that she's only pretending to read it so she doesn't have to start talking to Elsa. The woman looked as if she regretted it as soon as she invited Elsa in, a bit like when people in TV series invite vampires in and then, as soon as they've crossed the threshold, think, oh shit, to themselves just before they get bitten. At least this is what Elsa imagines one would be thinking in that type of situation, and that's also how the woman looks. The walls of the office are covered in bookshelves. Elsa has never seen so many books outside a library. She wonders if the woman in the black skirt has ever heard of an iPad. And then once again her thoughts drift off to Granny and the land of Almost Awake. For if this woman is the sea angel, basically she's the third creature from that world, along with Wolfheart and the Worse, that lives in Elsa's building. Elsa doesn't know if this means that Granny took all her stories from the real world and placed them in Miamis, or if the stories from Miamis became so real that the creatures came across to the real world. But the land of Almost Awake and her house are obviously merging. Elsa remembers how Granny said that the best stories are never completely realistic and never entirely made up. That was what Granny meant when she called certain things reality challenged. To Granny there was nothing that was entirely one thing or another. Stories were completely for real, and at the same time not. Elsa just wishes Granny had said more about the curse of the sea angel and how to break it, because she supposes this is why she sent Elsa here, and if Elsa doesn't figure out what to do, she'll probably never find the next letter. And then she'll never find the apology for Mum. She looks up at the woman on the other side of the desk and clears her throat demonstratively. The woman's eyelids flicker, but she keeps staring down at the letter.
Did you ever hear about the woman who read herself to death?
Asks Elsa. The woman's gaze glides up from the paper, brushes against her, and then flees back into the letter.
I don't know what it means, said the woman, almost fearfully.
Elsa sighs.
I've never seen so many books, it's almost insane. Haven't you heard of an iPad?
The woman's gaze suddenly moves up again, lingers for a longer time on Elsa.
I like books.
You think I don't like books? You can keep your books on the iPad. You don't need a million books in your office.
The woman's pupils dither back and forth over the desk. She gets out a mint tab from a little box and puts it on her tongue, with awkward movements as if her hand and tongue belonged to two different people.
I like physical books.
You can have all sorts of books on an iPad.
The woman's fingers tremble slightly. She peers at Elsa, a little as one peers at a person one meets outside a toilet where one has just spent a tad too long.
That's not what I mean by a book. I mean, a book in the sense of the dust jacket, the cover, the pages.
The book is the text, and you can read the text on an iPad.
The woman's eyes open and close like large fans.
I like holding the book when I'm reading.
You can hold an iPad.
I mean, I like being able to turn the pages, the woman tries to explain.
You can turn the pages on an iPad.
The woman nods with the slowest nod Elsa has seen in all her life. Elsa throws her arms out.
But, you know, do what you like. I have a million books. I was only, like, asking. It's still a book if you're reading it on an iPad. Soup is soup, whatever bowl it's in.
The woman's mouth moves spasmodically at the corners, spreading cracks in the surrounding skin.
I've never heard that proverb.
It's from my Amos, says Elsa.
The woman looks down at her lap, doesn't answer.
She really doesn't look like an angel, thinks Elsa. But on the other hand, she doesn't look like a drunk either.
So maybe it evens itself out. Maybe this is how halfway creatures look.
Why did Granny bring Wolfheart here? Asks Elsa.
Sorry, who?
You said Granny brought him here, and that's why he's afraid of you.
I didn't know you called him Wolfheart.
That's his name. Why is he afraid of you if you don't even know who he is?
The woman puts her hands in her lap and studies them as if she just caught sight of them for the first time and wonders what in the name of God they're doing there.
Your grandmother brought him here to talk about the war. She thought I'd be able to help him, but he got scared of me. He got scared of all my questions and scared of his memories, I think, she says at last. He has seen many, many wars. He has lived almost his whole life at war in one way or another. It does unbearable things to a human.
Why does he carry on like that with his hands?
Sorry?
He washes his hands all the time, like he's trying to wash off a smell of poo sort of thing.
Sometimes the brain does strange things to one after a tragedy. I think maybe he's trying to wash away.
She becomes silent, looks down.
What?
Elsa demands to know. The blood, the woman concludes, emptily.
Has he killed someone?
I don't know.
Is he sick in the head?
Excuse me?
You're a therapist, aren't you?
Yes.
Can't they be fixed, people who are sick in the head? Maybe it's sort of rude to call them sick, is it? Is he all broken up in the head?
All people who have seen war are broken.
Elsa shrugs.
He shouldn't have become a soldier then. It's because of soldiers that we have wars.
I don't think he was that sort of soldier. He was a peace soldier.
There's only one sort of soldier, Elsa snorts.
And she knows she's a hypocrite for saying it, because she hates soldiers and she hates wars, but she knows that if Wolfheart had not fought the shadows in the war without end, the entire land of Almost Awake would have been swallowed up by grey death. And she thinks a lot about that. Times you're allowed to fight and times when you're not. Elsa thinks about how Granny used to say,
"You have standards and I have double standards and so I win."
But it doesn't make Elsa feel like a winner.
"Maybe so," says the woman, in a low voice that skims over Elsa's thoughts.
"You don't have very many patients here, do you?"
says Elsa, with a pointed nod across the room. The woman doesn't answer. Her hands fidget with Granny's letter. Elsa sighs impatiently.
What else does Granny write? Does she say sorry for not being able to save your family?
The woman's eyes waver.
Yes, among other things.
Elsa nods.
And for sending me here?
Yes.
Why?
Because she knew you'd ask a lot of questions.
As a psychologist, I suppose I'm used to being the one that asks the questions.
What does reg psychotherapist mean?
Registered psychotherapist.
Oh, I thought it had something to do with bombs.
The woman doesn't quite know how to respond to that one. Elsa throws out her arm defensively and snorts.
Well, maybe it sounds stupid now, but it seemed more logical at the time. Everything seems obvious in hindsight.
The woman does something with the corner of her mouth that Elsa thinks might be a smile of some kind. but it's more like a stiff twitching, as if the muscles round her mouth are new to this game. Elsa looks around the office again. There are no photos here, as there were in the woman's flat, only books.
You got any good ones, then?
She asks, scanning the shelves. I don't know what you think is good, the woman answers carefully.
Do you have any Harry Potters?
No.
Not even one?
Elsa asks, incredulous. No.
You have all these books and not a single Harry Potter, and they let you fix people whose heads are broken.
The woman doesn't answer. Elsa leans back and tips the chair in that exact way her mum really hates. The woman takes another mint from the tin on the desk. She makes a movement towards Elsa to offer her one, but Elsa shakes her head.
Do you smoke?
Asks Elsa. The woman looks surprised. Elsa shrugs.
Granny also used to have a lot of sweets when she couldn't smoke, and she usually wasn't allowed to indoors.
I've stopped, says the woman.
Stopped or taking a break? It's not the same thing,
Elsa informs her. The woman nods, setting a new record for slowness. That would be more of a philosophical question, so it's difficult to answer. Elsa shrugs again.
Where did you meet Granny? Was it after the wave, or is that also difficult to answer?
It's a long story.
I like long stories.
The woman's hands take cover in her lap. I was on holiday, me and my family, we were on holiday. And it happened, an accident happened.
The tsunami,
says Elsa, gently. The woman's gaze flies round the room and then she says in passing, as if it only just occurred to her, your grandmother found me. The woman sucks so hard on the mint in her mouth that her cheeks look like Granny's that time she was going to borrow petrol from Elsa's dad's Audi by sucking it out of a plastic tube. After my husband and my boys, the woman begins to say, the last words stumble and fall into the chasm between the others as they pass, as if the woman had suddenly forgotten that she was in the middle of a sentence. Drowned, Elsa fills in, and then feels ashamed of herself when she realizes that it's probably very unpleasant to speak that word to someone whose family did. But the woman just nods, without looking angry. And then Elsa switches to the secret language and asks briskly,
do you also know our secret language?
Excuse me?
Oh, nothing.
Elsa mumbles in the usual language and looks down at her shoes. It was a test, and Elsa is surprised that the sea angel doesn't know the secret language, because everyone in the land of Almost Awake knows the secret language. But maybe that's a part of the curse, she thinks. The woman looks at her watch. Shouldn't you be at school? Elsa shrugs.
It's Christmas holidays.
The woman nods, probably more or less at a normal speed now.
Have you been to Miami's?
Asks Elsa. Is this some kind of joke?
If I'd been joking, I would have said, a blind guy walks into a bar and a table and a couple of chairs.
The woman doesn't answer. Elsa throws out her arms.
Do you get it? That a blind guy walks into a bar and a tape...
The woman looks into her eyes, smiles faintly. I got it. Thanks. Elsa shrugs sourly.
If you get it, laugh.
The woman takes such a deep breath that if you threw a coin into it, you'd never hear it hit the bottom. Did you think of that one yourself? She asks after that.
Which one?
Elsa counters. About the blind guy.
No, Granny told me.
My boys used to. They used to tell jokes like that, asking something strange and then you had to answer and then they said something and laughed. As she says the word laughed, she stands up, her legs as fragile as the wings of paper planes. And then everything changes quickly. Her whole manner. Her way of talking. Even her way of breathing. I think you should leave now, she says, standing by the window with her back towards Elsa. Her voice is weak, but almost hostile.
Why?
I want you to leave, the woman repeats in a hard voice.
But why? I've walked halfway across the city to give you Granny's letter and you've hardly had time to tell me anything and now you want me to leave. Do you get how cold it is out there?
You shouldn't have come here.
I came here because you were Granny's friend.
I don't need charity. I can manage on my own, says the woman grimly.
Sure, you're really managing bloody well. Really, but I'm not here out of charity,
Elsa manages to reply.
Well, get out then, you little brat. Get the hell out, hisses the woman, still without turning round.
Elsa starts breathing hard, frightened by the sudden aggression, and insulted by the woman not even looking at her. She hops off the chair with clenched fists.
Right then. So my mum was wrong when she said you were just tired, and Granny was right, you're just a bloody...
And then it goes as with all anger attacks. They don't just consist of one anger, but many. A long series of angers flung into a volcano in one's breast until it erupts. Elsa is angry at the woman in the black skirt because she doesn't say anything to make anything more understandable in this idiotic fairy tale. And she's angry at Wolfheart for abandoning her because he's afraid of this idiot psychotherapist. And most of all, she's angry at Granny and this idiotic fairy tale. And all those angers together get too much for her. She knows long before the word leaves her lips how wrong it is to yell it out.
Drunk! You're nothing but a drunk!
She regrets it terribly in the same instant. But it's too late. The woman in the black skirt turns round. Her face is contorted into a thousand broken pieces of a mirror.
Out!
I didn't mean...
Elsa begins to say, reeling backwards across the office floor, holding out her hands, wanting to apologise.
Sorry! Out!
Screams the woman, hysterically clawing at the air, as if looking for something to throw at her. And Elsa runs. She hurtles along the corridor and down the stairs and through a door to the entrance, sobbing so violently that she loses her footing, tumbles blindly and falls headlong. She feels her backpack whack against the back of her head and waits for the pain when her cheekbone meets the floor. But instead, she feels soft, black fur. And then everything bursts for her. She hugs the enormous animal so hard that she can feel it gasping for air.
Elsa?
Alf's voice can be heard from the front porch, absolutely cut and dried. Not like a question.
Come on, for Christ's sake, he grunts. Let's go home. You can't lie there bloody sobbing your heart out.
Elsa wants to yell out the whole story to Alf. Everything about the sea angel and how Granny sends her out on idiotic adventures and she doesn't even know what she's expected to do and how Wolfheart abandoned her when she needed him most and everything about Mum and the sorry Elsa had hoped to find here and everything about Harfy who will come and change everything. How Elsa is drowning in loneliness. She wants to shout it all out to Alf, but she knows he wouldn't understand anyway, because no one does when you're almost 8.
What are you doing here?
She sobs.
You gave me the damned address, he mutters. Someone had to bloody pick you up. I've been driving a taxi cab for 30 years, so I know you just don't leave little girls anywhere any old how.
He's quiet for a few breaths before adding into the floor.
And... your grandmother would have bloody beaten the life out of me if I hadn't picked you up.
Elsa nods and wipes her face on the worser's pelt.
Is that thing coming as well?
Alf asks grouchily. The worse looks back at him even more grumpily. Elsa nods and tries not to start crying again.
It'll have to go in the boot then,
says Alf firmly. But obviously that is not how things end up. Elsa keeps her face buried in its fur all the way home. It's one of the very, very best things about worses. They're waterproof. There's opera coming from the car stereo. At least Elsa thinks it must be opera. She hasn't really heard very much opera, but she's heard it mentioned and she supposes this is what it sounds like. When they're about halfway home, Alf peers with concern at her in the back mirror.
Is there anything you want?
Like what?
I don't know. Coffee?
Elsa raises her head and glares at him.
I'm 7.
What the hell's that got to do with it?
Do you know any 7-year-olds who drink coffee?
I don't know very many seven-year-olds.
I can tell.
Well, bloody forget it then, he grunts.
Elsa lowers her face into the worser's pelt. Alf swears a bit in the front, and then after a while he passes her a paper bag. It has the same writing on it as the bakery where Granny always went.
There's a cinnamon bun in there, he says, adding, but don't bloody cry all over it or it won't taste good.
Elsa cries on it. It's good anyway. When they get to the house, she runs from the garage up to the flat without even thanking Alf or saying goodbye to the worse, and without thinking about how Alf has seen the worse now and might even call the police. Without saying a word to him, she walks right past the dinner that George has put on the kitchen table. When Mum comes home, she pretends to be asleep, and when the drunk starts yelling on the stairs that night, and the singing starts again, Elsa, for the first time, does what all the others in the house do. She pretends she doesn't hear.
Chapter 18. Smoke.
Every fairy tale has a dragon. Thanks to Granny, that is. Elsa is having terrible nightmares tonight. She's always dreaded closing her eyes and no longer being able to get to the land of almost awake. The worst thing would be a dreamless sleep. But this is the night she learns of something even worse. Because she can't get to the land of almost awake, and yet she dreams about it. She can see it clearly from above, as if she's lying on her stomach on top of a huge glass dome, peering down at it. Without being able to feel any smells or hear any laughter or feel the rush of wind over her face when the cloud animals take off, it's the most terrifying dream of all the eternities. Miamis is burning. She sees all the princes and princesses and the worses and the dream hunters and the sea angel and the innocent people of the land of almost awake running for their lives. Behind them, the shadows are closing in, banishing imagination and leaving nothing but death as they pass. Elsa tries to find Wolfheart in the inferno, but he's gone. Cloud animals, mercilessly butchered, lie in the ashes. All of Granny's tales are burning. One figure wanders among the shadows. A slim man enveloped in a cloud of cigarette smoke. That's the only scent Elsa can smell up there on top of the dome, the smell of Granny's tobacco. Suddenly the figure looks up and two clear blue eyes penetrate the haze. A shroud of mist seeps between his thin lips. Then he points directly at Elsa, his forefinger deformed into a grey claw, and he shouts something, and in the next moment, hundreds of shadows launch themselves from the ground and engulf her. Elsa wakes up when she throws herself out of the bed and lands face down against the floor. She cowers there, her chest heaving, her hands covering her throat. It feels as if millions of eternities have passed before she can trust that she's back in the real world. She's not had a single nightmare since Granny and the cloud animals first brought her to the land of almost awake. She had forgotten how nightmares feel. She stands up, sweaty and exhausted, checks to see she's not been bitten by one of the shadows, and tries to get her thoughts into order. She hears someone talking in the hall and has to muster all her powers of concentration to scatter the mists of sleep and be able to hear what's happening.
I see, but surely you understand, Ulrika, that it's a bit odd for them to be calling you. Why don't they call Kent? Kent is actually the chairman of this residence association, and I am in charge of information, and it's common practice for the accountant to call the chairman with these types of errands, not just any old person.
Elsa understands that any old person is an insult. Mum's sigh, as she answers, is so deep that it feels as if Elsa's bed linen is ruffled by the draught.
I don't know why they called me Britt Marie, but the accountant said he would come here today to explain everything.
Elsa opens the bedroom door and stands in her pyjamas in the doorway. Not only Britt Marie is standing there in the hall, Leonard and Maud and Alf are also there. Samantha is sleeping on the landing. Mum is only wearing her dressing gown, hurriedly tied across her belly. Maud catches sight of Elsa and smiles mildly, with a biscuit tin in her arms. Leonard gulps from a coffee thermos. For once, Alf doesn't look entirely in a bad mood, which means he only looks irritated in an everyday way. He nods curtly at Elsa,
as if she has forced him into a secret. Only then does Elsa remember that she left him and the worse in the garage yesterday when she ran up to the flat. Panic wells up inside of her, but Alf glares at her and makes a quick, stay calm gesture. So that's what she tries to do. She looks at Britt Marie and tries to figure out if she's worked up today because she has found the worse, or if it's a quite normal fuss about the usual Britt Marie stuff. It seems to be the latter, thank God, but directed at Mum. So, the landlords have suddenly had the notion that they might be willing to sell the flats to us. After all the years that Kent has been writing them letters, now they have suddenly decided, just like that, easy peasy, and then they contact you instead of Kent. That's curious, don't you find that curious, Ulrika? Mum tightens her dressing gown sash. Maybe they couldn't get hold of Kent, and maybe since I've lived here so long they thought, we've actually lived here the longest, Ulrika. Kent and I have lived here longer than anyone else.
Alf has lived in the house the longest, Mum corrects her.
Granny has lived here the longest,
Elsa mumbles, but no one seems to hear her, especially not Britt Marie.
Isn't Kent away on a business trip? Asks Mum.
Britt Marie pauses at this and nods imperceptibly.
Maybe that's why they didn't get hold of him. That's why I called you as soon as I hung up after speaking to the account.